Hey, Caitlin. Long time. JK. No C. JK.
I know. It feels like just a few minutes ago that we were on another call recording another episode. So good to see you again. I have a fresh beverage and change into sweatpants. So we are moving along.
COVID couture.
Yes, exactly.
I should have taken out stock and headbands alone. One day I'll get a haircut again.
Haircuts. What a thing. Like, what a concept.
Well, safe and healthy. I'll take it for now. Mm-hmm. I'll just go back to the hair I had, you know, prior to leaning in to my more confident butch pieces of me. I'm going to be awkward no matter what the length of my hair is. I guess now there's just more hair to get in the way during the awkward moments. So,
LOL. Well, I appreciate how much you've leaned into headbands, like the bandana headband. It's like really a vibe and a look, and I like it.
I look like Josh Brolin in The Goonies. Like, before he gets tied up and they all run away from him. You will look this up now, but like that red kind of paisley bandana he wears when he's lifting weights in the living, that's what my hair currently looks like. And when it's slicked back, I look like Christian Bale in American Psycho. Neither are good looks for a woman. Like, you know, I'm lucky enough to be married to somebody who keeps it from getting to mullet status, so, you know.
And that's what's important.
That's
what matters. We are all doing our best.
I embrace a lot of Southern things, but I am not a confident enough individual to give the mullet the proper due it should receive. I'm just not. I can't rock. I can't give it that suaveness. On me, it just looks like sadness. So.
Well, now that we've talked about our hair for like 8 minutes, Rebecca, do you want to tell our friends and people what we are talking about today?
A few days ago, you and I had the opportunity to talk to Stephanie Shea and Lucy Bexley about their novelettes, and in going through what work they put into it and that form of narrative storytelling, we just wanted to talk a little bit more about that because these are the fastest relationships we've had the opportunity to see that also have an ending versus just being very fast in the first few chapters with a lot mm-hmm. more continuation. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to reach out and see if you wanted to explore WW, lesfic, queer lady storytelling done in 10,000 words or fewer.
Yeah, so today we're talking about Avalanche by Stephanie Shea and Flying First by Lucy Bexley. And this was my first time reading something this short as far as lesfic goes, which was really interesting because it definitely took me back a little bit to my origin story of a fanfic reader and writer. There's something about that crisp rise and fall of a relationship that happens within such a short amount of time that I'm really digging. This may have prompted a whole exploration of like short fiction for me.
I was gonna ask you if this brought up any of your old fanfic days, because mm-hmm. I know that I'm going to show my naivete. Pardon me. I believe mm-hmm. they're called one-shots. Is that the correct terminology? Like a
sometimes,
quick fest?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you would think I'd be better at this by now. But for some reason, it's just a train I didn't catch when it was like a raging thing. I don't know. I always feel very behind on the fanfic front.
Well, I think looking at these two works on their own, I think these are such good examples of what like a novelette should be, and I think they illuminate why people can sometimes really be drawn to shorter stories with more condensed plots, because in both of them we get such rich characters, backstory, lots of history, and we get the whole arc of the beginnings for both of these pieces of relationships, which I think both authors did really masterfully. And if the only thing that I wanted was I just wanted more of the story, but I felt very like it was complete and they took me where they needed to take me, which even a full-length romance novel sometimes struggles to do.
Yeah, I can't help but think of, you know, when I would want to consume these or how I would want to continue to consume narratives at this length and kind of in this energy space. Mm-hmm. And it just brings me back to when I was living in a more urban center and those, you know, post-work days where you just want to decompress, but you also know that you're going to be on public transit a little bit longer because it's incredibly jam-packed and all the lines are, you know, competing for the same amount of space with rush hour traffic. And it felt like the perfect little story to kind of like leave the office, have a moment, and then before you walk in the door to do dinner, just have that full experience. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really appreciate almost, I don't want to say episodic, but the same thing you get when you, you know, you watch an episode of a TV show versus a full arc. Of course, I want the entire story of the full arc, but there can be like really solid episodes you just keep going back to again and again because the episode is so strong. And I found that both Shay and Bexley's writing gave me that kind of that strength and peace that was enough by itself.
Well, should we sort of pick them apart one by one? Let's go alphabetical and we'll start with the Bexley.
Sure. So in Flying First, actually, can I volley to you? Because this is a little bit more, between the two of us in our professions, I feel that you are more likely to be on a plane going abroad on a work trip than I am.
No, I would not. My boss would never take me on a work trip because somebody would have to be manning the office, first of all.
I always flew solo for work. I came to New England to continue a job. I was working in D.C. and I would fly solo to New England and back to D.C. for this job 3 to 4 times a year. So there's, you know, and all those planes are tiny. There's no first class in like a puddle jumper plane. So
so we kick off our story with Chloe, who is an assistant at a tech startup. She is the assistant to a tech executive, Monroe. And right off the bat, we get this great scene of Chloe struggling to get coffee for her boss without spilling it all over herself, which she does multiple times. I have been there. I have done that. And she has an altercation with her boss that takes her by surprise, and she ends up quitting despite herself. And her boss says, please don't quit. How about I take you with me to India to meet the India team? And Chloe agrees to it with the caveat that she will be flying first class.
Yeah. So if I can immediately shout out, I feel I have to be also upfront. Lucy Bexley and I know each other in real life. Not well. We've actually grabbed coffee before, but I don't want this to seem like ridiculous favoritism because we're getting to know each other the same way I'm getting to know many people who are kind enough to talk to me. But the thing that grabbed me so much about this novelette is how incredibly witty and funny it is. The scene when they're taking off in the plane and Chloe's had, you know, her glass of champagne and she's ready to, as she puts it, have just enough drinks to get just tipsy enough to fall asleep over the Atlantic to stop craving her boss in ways that she shouldn't crave her boss. And Monroe is just not, she's freaking out. They haven't even taxied yet. She's not ready to get in the air. And basically, you know, Chloe makes a joke at the extent of what, you're not even going to drink the champagne, worried if you're not, you know, you have to be DD. So if the pilot can't fly, you can take their place. And the joke continues to manifest. I don't want to over explain it because I really want people to read this if they haven't. But it is so, the banter and the wittiness makes the power difference between these two work for me, because Chloe is just gritty enough that it almost levels them out, even though Monroe really does have all the power. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I agree. The dialogue of this is really good. The wittiness is really good. I have trouble sometimes in these stories of especially like a boss assistant kind of power dynamic relationship for multiple reasons, one of which is my own job, but the other is the kind of like how do I even put this without so I we,
The HR impossible nightmare that comes with this.
it's even beyond it's like even beyond that and it's sort of like to be an assistant you have to put your needs below everybody else's and your bosses come first. So it's for me, it's bigger than an HR thing. It's like the job literally demands that you get to know this person on a level that's like so kind of intimate and very one-sided. And so I liked reading this and I loved their dialogue and sort of the back and forth. And like, I like that we see them as Chloe is kind of like hands up. She's like, I'm not doing this anymore. Like, I will be X, Y, and Z. But the whole time I was just like, come on, girl. Do you need this job? Because you're talking like you don't. I don't know. There's just some layers here that like for me is difficult to parse out. And so this is very much an example of where I loved this story and I got tripped up by my own experiences in like the type of world that's being described. However, I liked that it quickly went from I thought that this was going to be a like workplace drama, and it really isn't because they are on this plane. They are supposed to be going to India. And instead, and it's a little too timely, there is a passenger on the plane who has a virus that has been spreading around the world, and they have to make an emergency landing and quarantine people who might have been gotten sick from this other passenger. And so what we have is a classic fanfic trope of the bed is too small, or there's only one bed, which I appreciated. Of the two of them having to, you know, they're sort of stranded without their luggage and they're at their wits' ends. They've been flying. One of them is tired. One of them is exhausted. And so their guard really comes down and we get to see them stripped away from like their real life obligations in this kind of moment of just the two of them.
So the thing that works for me with these two is that Chloe, like you kind of mentioned, maybe doesn't need the job as much, though at the end, well, let me come back to that in just a second. She's very snarky and funny, and it is told in first person, so there is an amount of kind of the arrogant sarcasm we get because we get the internal monologue, which is nice, but also Chloe kind of tops Monroe in this, and I think that allows it to work a little bit more for me too when it comes to the power dynamic, because there's consent on that level. Because I'm always interested when you tell a shorter story, you have to also make the chemistry work better instead of just an easiness to it, so to speak. And it works here. Like those two, I definitely was. By the time
Oh,
everything like
yeah.
really got to where it was, it like completely made sense to me. Of course, these two were gonna spend some very intimate moments together in the shower. And it, as I was saying just a moment ago about the power dynamic and if Chloe needs this job, at the end of this story, Monroe basically is like, "Hey, I found you a different job." And Chloe has to reassess really quick of like, well, do I want to leave this one? Are you kicking me out? What the hell is going on? And of course, that's able to unpack more of what happens with them, what Chloe really wants professionally, and gives the to be continued within our minds, since you don't usually get an epilogue in a short narrative, a place where I felt I could go and continue their story. So
Yeah. It was cute. Like the ending was really cute and I loved I mean, I like Chloe as a character, but I love, you know, I have such a soft spot for for like a femmy boss lady like
Okay,
running a
I'm gonna call
business or
you out.
something.
Oh, can I call you out? Can I just ask? It's not even a call out.
What?
Can I ask? Is Monroe who you want to be with, or is Monroe who you want to be?
I don't know that I know that. I mean, I am
As a femme
in my
powerful woman.
life, right? So like I consider myself a femme powerful woman who will become even more powerful as I take over more and more of the world. And I am attracted to people who have as much like ambition or like want to make marks on the world. That's all who I've always been into. So I'm really attracted to that as a character. I'm attracted to Monroe. And beyond my just like, that's my favorite type of character to read. Anyway, we've talked about that ad nauseum on this show. But I loved that through Chloe's eyes, we got to see the different layers of this woman. We get to see her being scared, anxious, vulnerable, funny, witty, angry. And then at the end, we see both of them truly be vulnerable with each other. And I just loved the, like, Monroe says, "So I didn't get you, let's be clear, I got you an interview. You have to get the job yourself, but I will take you out. What I'm offering you is a date afterwards. So, like, I hope you'll do the interview and I hope you'll do the date afterwards." So there's like a great promise of what's to come. And what could be a foundation for these characters that at the end of on the e-reader that I read this on, this was like 34 pages or so, you know, it's like not very much. And I just felt so like, yes, okay, like I feel good. I like this. There's a lot of promise. There's a lot of forward thinking for these characters, but I feel very content.
Spin-off story. Chloe goes to the interview and gets it, and whomever's in the new office, we get their narrative of their whatever. Da 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 da.
Yeah, build a whole
You
little
know,
world.
this whole world of interconnected whatever. But again, as I've established many a time, I'm a greedy reader, and I just always want more. So, how about we leave first class planes and heading continents away, and let's shift out to the left coast, out to California. And let's talk about Stephanie Shea's Avalanche. Yeah?
So, Rebecca, when this book opens, where are we? What's happening?
The novel opens, the novelette opens, and we are in California, out towards the LA area. And we are introduced to Blake, a photographer, a well-known photographer, a playgirl, arguably, who has found out that she will be photographing a very well-known model, Drew, who she knows very well herself because they have a history of friendship tinged with not recognized feelings.
Some
Is that
sapphic undertones, if you will.
sure? Yeah, I mean, like stroking each other's hair and binge watching TV together in college and being in, you know. Blake was in Drew's wedding. Oh, I pr should probably say Drew's married to a guy,
Right. So, yeah,
as one
Drew is
drinks.
married to a guy. They haven't seen each other in several years after Drew left and went on to pursue her modeling career. And so the two of them have lived these separate lives, and it seems like they've both been watching each other from afar as they've ascended into their careers. And this is a pivotal career moment for Drew as a model. This is her first nude photo shoot, and it's for Lux magazine, which we're sort of given the impression that it's a big deal. It's like a high fashion kind of magazine. There's some talk about like the Lux standards. So she, Drew, requests that Blake be the photographer. And when Blake tries to turn it down, Drew says, like, what the fuck? Like, why wouldn't she want to work with me and reconnect with me? And she goes to Blake's house and they reconnect for the first time in years.
In a longer novel, I would be on Blake's side 100% about why that's not cool. Since it's a shorter storytelling, I'm going to be like, okay, you guys, work this stuff out. But that's a lot of trauma to deal with, like, all at once, let alone, you know, lost love. And then, okay, so the one thing I do want to point out super fast, because I dropped it, which speaks to my own, like, insecurity, but it is a nude photo shoot. But the one thing Shay does beautifully over and over again is Shay reiterates that there is a constant dialogue about safety and respect, and the crew that is present, you know, exhibiting only professionalisms, and there being like an absolute stop button if at any moment anybody doesn't feel 100% comfortable. And I think that's really important to reiterate in writing, because when we see it in writing, we learn to expect it in real life. So that caveat out of the way, because I'm always on those soapboxes. These two just, I can't speak to your life, but I think I will just say within my life, there are definitely people that don't want me to randomly show up on their doorstep. And there are definitely people I don't randomly want to show up on mine, because that's a lot of stuff to unpack very quickly, which is super, super hypocritical on my part, because the idea of dealing with that type of energy is way too much. But in this, I'm just like, yeah, you two talk about this attraction and why she actually got married and why you didn't say anything and why you should have said something. And just, it was like not a train wreck, because I didn't really feel like the husband was going to get that hurt, so I didn't really worry about him. But also, Shay writes with every physical sense of set, like touch, taste, smell. Like there, it's so subtle, but mentioned that every scene was something tangible I could really picture in my mind's eye and like take in all the sensory things around it too. Which is not something I read as often as I would assume I probably did. But, you know, yeah, I thought that was super, super effective.
Yeah, so I think a strength of this story, beyond Shay's writing, which is beautiful, and like you said, so rhapsodic, like there's so much texture to it, there's so many sensations, but it really plays upon, I think, an old idea of the friendships, whether they're gay, straight, whatever. Like, we've all had friendships that we wanted to be more, and we were sort of in a nebulous place where there were a lot of unspoken feelings. And more often than not, nothing happens with those. Like, who among us has not had a best friend that we wanted to kiss when we were, you know, whatever. And
so, Caitlin, let's unpack.
Well, no, like, some of us had best friends that we had these, like, really intensely close relationships that everyone around us thought were because we liked each other. And then in retrospect, after we didn't speak for several years, I realized, and after I came out, I was like, oh, right, that's what was happening. So I definitely, full disclosure, brought those kinds of feelings as I read this. And so I kind of agree with you. If this was a longer novel and the character had just shown up on someone's doorstep, I would have been like, whoa, like there could have been a different way to do this. But I think there's something to be said for the Drew doing that, Drew showing up at Blake's door and kind of acting like nothing's changed, like acting like she can restart their friendship. It was like a spark starting a flame, because there's no way for them to ignore each other after this, and there's no way for Blake to feel comfortable without making some kind of gesture, like doing something one way or another. Like, Blake has to respond in a way that's not just cursory because of the situation that she's been forced into. So I thought that was smart of Shay to do that, because it propels the dialogue forward, because very quickly we do get Blake agreeing to do the photography for this shoot, and the two of them come together, my favorite phrase to say on this podcast. Evidently, the two of them meet up and have a heart-to-heart where Blake admits that she feels like she should have told Drew not to get married, and Drew says, I shouldn't have been married. We're separated. Like, we've been trying to fix it. We don't, it's just not working. And I have feelings for you.
Yeah. And because of Drew's celebrity and Blake's celebrity, because within this world, Blake as a photographer is just as famous. So they both have, they would both be followed for gossip columns, for tabloids. They share a kiss in a public space where they could be photographed. And there was this lovely moment of where Drew's like, well, I'm bisexual, pansexual, question mark. And that active negotiation of yourself when you also feel that you have to claim yourself because you feel other people are going to make you do so publicly. There were a lot of little things I like really held on to in this, and that being one, the idea of celebrity and publicity, and then you having to declare yourself so quick, and Blake even being like, well, slow down, like, deal with stuff. There's this, when they're talking about their history, there's a line in there where there's a mention of Blake crying and making the tears look like they're happy tears at Drew's wedding, when really, of course, they're tears of mourning losing Drew, because the night before they had been up all night hanging out, partying, doing kind of the last stag dance, so to speak. And there's something so inherently of the queer experience to me when I read that, like, it punched me in the stomach of that real experience of when you're happy for the people in your life, but in the process of like your queer community, your queer becoming, I think many of us have that smiling through the pain moment. And I'm not going to get too deep, but that sat with me really, really deeply. And I don't, it's kind of like what I would want my peers' narratives now to be at the age I'm at now. I want things to fast forward a little bit. I want them to get the lives and the people that they've always wanted if it started differently in their 20s. So yeah, I don't know. How did Shay describe this? She's like, well, she's kind of married. She's
right.
She's kind of this. Like, it's basically legal, but the marriage itself, the partnership itself, is just obsolete. So it was never really, I never really felt bad for the husband in this, and not because he's a guy and I'm guy bashing. There's just obviously the piece of paper and the legality is what's still there. That's it.
Yeah. And like, it's obvious. So Shay does something really smart here where we get, before we learn from Drew that she is separated from her husband, we see their interactions. We see her interactions with her husband, Eric, who does something architecture, you know, he's like, and he's going on a business trip and packing and preparing. And we see these really tender moments between them, but they're utterly devoid of chemistry. And reading it at first, I was going to be like, okay, here we go. Like, they like each other, but they don't love each other anymore. Like, the chemistry isn't there. And instead, when we learn that they're separated, you look back on those interactions with a different lens and you see like, oh, right. Like, they're separated, but they still are really like, they've had a relationship together. They've had a life together. So obviously they're still important to each other. And I liked that nuance. Like, I don't think we get to see that very much in queer stories.
As straight people, they experience lesbian bed deaths somehow. They got to the point where, like, it stopped being whatever, and they just became very good friends. And
well, it's even beyond that. I feel like we're so used to the queer narrative of, like, the gay girl gets the woman who's married mm-hmm. to a man, and it's, like, dramatic, intense, and the man doesn't see it coming, and, like, it's tears and crying and... And this instead was what I think actually does happen a lot in adult relationships where, like, you've built a life together and you work as partners, but you don't have that passion, or you don't, like, you are in different moments of your lives and you just don't want to be in this partnership anymore, which I thought was, I was really thankful for that because we already had, like, there's already so much emotion and, like, years of buildup for this relationship that I wouldn't have been able to handle it if we had had to deal with like sneaking around behind someone's back or kind of a teary.
Yeah, because the relationship doesn't feel like it was built on harming somebody else both times. Like, it doesn't feel like Drew and Blake were denied the first time with one action, and then, Eric and Blake were denied, Eric and Drew were denied the second time. So I wonder sometimes if we would see a narrative more about people who just grew apart and it doesn't blow up, like their evolution just wasn't on the same plane, how we would approach things. But that's again me selfishly wanting to see other representations that I don't usually come across. I will say, I love when we read in novels when people are starting to get hot and heavy and then they get interrupted and they can't finish. So I'm calling this novelette Beaver Damming by Postmates. So I thought that was a well-timed doorbell. But yeah, I again for a short work, selfishly, I want more, but it worked for me too. I feel that I did get a full story out of it. So
What I liked about both of these novelettes is that both of them managed to not only have these romances, but they incorporated women actively pursuing their careers and women like coming to terms with the power that they hold, and how they're viewed by other people, which I thought was really interesting. Like both Bexley and Shay move so deftly with all of these threads that it's just so impressive to me that they were able to do this. And it's impressive that it's like two authors kind of at the start of their writing careers. So it's exciting to see where they'll be able to go from here.
yeah, I'm super excited for their future narratives because they already allow their characters to be adaptable to change instead of change being the thing that completely traumatizes and halts movement. And I think, the hardest thing for me personally as a storyteller is figuring out how to connect A to C and not getting stuck on B the whole time. And I think these two as authors, each page flowed really well. The next movement made sense. And as they continue to make this into much longer stories and much, more detailed narratives, I really look forward to what that journey may look like because the things they chose to focus on and give us just enough extra detail about are all things as a reader I really, really enjoy reading. So I'm really excited for what's next. And I will definitely be hitting that, slam checkout now button as soon as those things drop.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Caitlin, at the end, we usually do the volley back and forth, but I'm just going to go ahead and kick this. If you'd like to talk to me a little bit more, my name's Rebecca. You can reach me on Instagram at Rebecca Writes a Romance, or probably more quickly at Twitter at Rebecca ATTT Pod. It's A Tip the Tongue Pod, ATT Pod, ATTT Pod. See, even here, I can't do it. And then if people wanted to reach us or you, Caitlin, where would they go?
Yeah, I am on Instagram at Same Sex in the City, and I'm on Twitter, which I'm trying to be better about, at Same Sex the City. And if you want to keep in touch with our podcast, you can do so on Instagram at A Tip of the Tongue or on Twitter at ATTT Pod. And you'll want to hit that subscribe button. I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos. We have a really fun episode coming next week. A really, how do I say, exciting book. And we have a secret surprise guest.
This guest, y'all, I'm gonna have to change every way I talk going forward because of this guest.
I'm like getting so excited about it. I can't wait to record that episode and for everyone to hear it.
It
So
will be an experience. Yay.
everyone, what you're hearing coming from Rebecca is pure excitement.
I'm super excited, but also when you find out who it is, yeah.
So, like I said, fun, exciting stuff dropping soon. And thank you everyone for listening. We'll see y'all around.
As I drop my Kindle for the third time this recording. Caitlin, it's a pleasure. I look forward to it, and I gotta go take some notes because I definitely have to be ready for this episode. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.